You are listening to Mommying While Muslim podcast, where hosts Uzma and Zeba share their personal stories of mommying in a post-9/11 world. This podcast is designed with the Muslim American mom in mind, so grab a cup of coffee and pull up to their table.
Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mommying While Muslim podcast. This is Uzma Jafri.
And this is Zeba Hassan. We are essentially like last minute. Let's get this done for the week. We have so much going on. What's going on with you? I get to see you, but like by the time this drops,
we'll be with you.
We'll be together.
Yeah, we'll have been together for over 24 hours. So I'm super duper excited about that. Super nervous. You're going to kick my butt. I have not packed yet.
Well, you know what? I always pack last minute because then I feel like I'm like, okay, I know I need this. And it, you know, I feel like it's the ADHD paralysis, you know, like now that I'm learning a little bit more about
procrastinate.
Then I'm like, I have a motor and I get everything done.
Pressure works.
Pressure does work. I mean, I know it's not ideal for everybody, but I wait last minute to get everything done. So I don't blame you. But in my head, I mentally pack ahead of time. I'm sure you probably in your brain, you have a list.
I actually write down the list. And then I go through it.
I have it in my crazy brain.
I can't do that. I have to write it down. And then, you know, I like to cross the lines off as I get everything. So I have like main outfits. I have unmentionables. I have accessories. Then I have makeup. And so those are my categories. Oh, and now I have to add shoes because 5 days in DC, I got to have shoes and boots.
Well, so, it's like in the 50s and like late 50s. You don't have to worry about
that. Means boots. Cold for me. You know that.
Oh,
right?
See, that's cold for you.
Yeah, it's freezing.
But you don't need snow boots.
No, they're not. They're just cute boots.
Okay, cute boots. You'll get to those wear all your winter outfits.
My winter stuff. Yeah.
See, like that you don't normally get to wear. So I am super excited. So super excited. I think we're creating all this banter for the people that are just have been living under a rock for the last like 4 months. What is it that we're doing and why do we get to see each other?
So Zeba and her team has been working, our event people have been working very diligently for, I don't know, like 7 months, I think.
7 months,
on the Iman Entrepreneur Expo. I feel like longer. The Iman Entrepreneur Expo is to make it sweet and simple for people like myself who just need it very spelled out clearly, is a bazaar, a market where Muslim vendors, Muslim vendors who sell either tangible products or services or don't even sell anything and they provide services for free and they're resources that we don't know about as Muslim moms and families, they're going to be there presenting. There's not a whole huge number of them, but there's quite a few of them that are local to the DMV area because we want to uplift and elevate and market for these Muslim entrepreneurs and creators. So come, it's open to the family, $5 at the door.
At the door.
At the door. Don't freak out. There's no cap to how many people can come because it's going to be open door policy, in and out. People will be streaming. And it's a bazaar with lots of activities. So there's going to be story time readings. Check out our schedule online on Instagram stories. Start making your plans to come because we have at least two story times that I know of. We have painting that's for adults and for children. So ladies, if you've never painted, I swear it's going to change your life. I'm not an artist, but like my first painting class, I was like, wow, I feel better than I do after therapy. Like for real, legit art therapy is a thing. We have an episode on that, our first season, go check it out. The opportunities, we just secured another guest who did not know about it. I think their people did not tell them, but we have another guest. Is it a surprise? The meet and
greet? It's not a surprise. We are excited to have her.
Hina Khan, author of It's Ramadan, Curious George, Amina's Song, Amina's Voice, lots of other books for Muslim kids, is going to be there. I'm bringing my collection of Hina Khan books to get autographed because I'm cheesy like that. I think you could probably bring yours too. I'm volunteering her for it. She doesn't know yet, but that's okay. Like do that because it's something special to have for your kids, especially when they're little. They think that's so, so cool. And I know this because Ilyas and Duck author Omar Khwaja also did that for my kids when he came here for story time.
They're going to be there as well.
Yeah. Another author. Oh, I forgot. So we have two authors on site. We have another story time for kids. It's just going to be fabulous. That is going to be from 10 to 4, tickets at the door. You don't have to stay for the whole time. Come. And, you know, it's a great place for kids to like let off steam while you do your shopping and networking and like
lots adulting. Of yummy food too. So we have like food. Big Red Halal truck. We have a lot of these food trucks that are going to be there for purchase. Mosaic, Syrian refugee kitchen. So we're supporting local, like I said, local entrepreneurs, yummy food, amazing activities, and you can get some of your shopping for Ramadan.
For Eid, yeah, Ramadan and Eid
started. Yeah. Yes.
4 o'clock, doors closed, everybody out, unless you want to come back at what time, 6?
6 o'clock for the VIP tickets. The door will be open to our Empower and Elevate Gala event extravaganza.
I appreciate this because Zeba understands my aversion to multi-day events. And that's why I was like, can we just do everything in one day? So she did this for me because she loves me. And I am so, so grateful to you for that. So this gala is to fundraise for nonprofits, Team Wations, Bloom Charity, and Hawa Collective as well, right?
Yes.
So 3 nonprofits. Hawa Collective is our baby, which we are using to help those women who are like, I think I should start a podcast. I think I should start a blog. I think I should start a magazine. I think I should start a vlog. Yes, you should. And you need money for those things. You need resources. Mm-hmm. You need time. Hawa Collective has created it for you. And we will be helping elevate those voices. Team Wations is, of course, Cyrus Sophia, our event coordinators. In homage of her son that she lost to aplastic anemia. It raises funds for that disease because there's a dearth of funds in America for cancer research for children. We have a lot for adults, but not for children. And this is a blood disorder, even less funding from the government for something like that. Then we have Bloom for Charity that builds playgrounds in orphanages. First, all up and down Morocco, and now they're going international and working on one in Palestine once everything dies down. Remember that tickets for the Bazaar Expo from the morning, 100% of that goes to PCRF. We'll still have their codes and donate links up at the gala with a special presentation going on in the background so that we can continue raising money for them. And then the gala is black tie. I'm wearing, going to try to wear a sequin gown. Let's see if I fit into it.
God, I'm so excited. I know she already says, I'm going to need somebody to zip me.
I'm going to zip myself into that thing without breaking it. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to be dressed, heels, pretty. And it's not an all women's event. So men will be there for those who are wearing hijab. Wear your hijab and glam it up, baby girls. And we will see you there to raise money for 3 different beautiful causes. I'm super duper excited about it.
So am I. But of course you start getting like the event nervousness, like what if nobody shows up? What if all that fun stuff. So we are actually almost at capacity for the tickets for the gala. I believe. Yeah. So that's the beautiful thing.
That has limited tickets. I forgot.
And that has limited tickets because it's not just a typical fundraising quote unquote dinner. It's a VIP networking ceremony networking hour for all the change makers, all the people that like to do the things in the DMV area to actually meet each other, because we know of each other, but we don't necessarily know each other. And when we meet in person, I feel like that's when that collaboration, your energy level goes up, all of that good stuff. And then we sit down and then we have an amazing, amazing show for you. So I am very much excited. I'm not as excited about the topic we're going to be talking about today as we continue our Kinks and Control in the Bedroom. And February your special series. Guest today
is us.
Are Zeba and Uzma. And I'm the most socially awkward person around this. So let's see how this goes. Uzma, do you want to kick it off? What are we talking about?
So we are talking about spicing it up for kink and control, because a lot of the stuff that we talked about so far this month has been more pathologies and how to address issues that leave us feeling a lack of control or out of control in the bedroom. And so how do we get control? We freeze and we like turn it all off and we don't want to talk about it and we avoid. But Zeba's not going to do that this year, because remember, she promised that one of her words for 2024 is sexing. So she's going to be working on
that. That was for behind closed doors, literally, that I just told a few people to hold me accountable. And now
everybody knows.
Out in the universe.
The listeners know. Well, yeah, you shared it. Well, it's out there. So I wanted to talk about, you know, you take baby steps, right? We're not going to jump right into like S&M or something. No, that's That's not what kink and control necessary means. Yeah, that's not what kink and control means. It really is going to be what you're comfortable with. Remember last time we talked to that clay couple?
Yes.
Created this Muslim surviving marriage series. And so we talked about it. We put it in our show notes for those of you who still didn't buy it. I know at least one of our listeners did. And I'm looking at you, bro. A bro bought this. I'm very excited. He knows who he is. He's awesome. And I know that his marriage is probably working really good. I've seen him take care of his children. So I'm like super impressed, mashallah. But so these questions.
We're not going to call him out.
We're not going to call him out. We're just going to say, mashallah, mashallah. I don't want him to get the evil eye, but mashallah for you, my bro. I love it. So these are cards that are going to be in three different colors. And they're labeled for better or for worse. So these are questions that are, you know, if you stumble upon problems in your marriage, are you going to be able to talk about it? Because remember, one of the hardest things that we've addressed in this series is talking about it, whether you're talking to your doctor, whether you're talking to your girlfriends, and most important person is your spouse. You know, like you got to tell your partner.
And how funny
wrong.
Is this that we can talk about this topic with our girlfriends?
Yes.
But a lot of us have a harder time talking about it with our significant other. You know, you're a doctor.
Why
do you think that is?
I don't know. I feel like, I don't understand. This is me personally. When people are like, oh, I'm married my best friend. My husband's my best friend. He is categorically not for me.
No.
Like for me, it's women.
My husband is not my best friend.
I draw my energy from women. I do not draw my energy from men. Maybe that's some of the baggage and some of the trauma that I carry over from all of the misogyny I experienced growing up and, you know, working. So I think I still hold it against it. Maybe. I mean, I'm still working on it, you know?
Yes. But, we're all works in progress, everybody.
Yeah.
We're all works in progress.
But I mean, if you think about it, even in family dynamics, when we were growing up, could we talk to our parents about a lot of stuff?
Oh,
could
no
our
way.
Kids talk to us about everything? We like to think they can.
Yes.
But I'll give an example of my son texted me the other night and was like, or messaged me in the family chat. And he's like, if so-and-so is playing in the soccer game, I'm not playing. Just tell coach. And I was like, whoa. And this is like at night, right? So then in the morning when I'm dropping him off to school, I was like,
where'd
that come from? Like, what happened? And he's like, I don't want to talk to you about it. I'm just telling you that if so-and-so plays on the team, I am not playing at the game on Saturday. And that's all I want to say. So no, not everybody can talk about everything all the time with everyone as open and as safe as we try to make them feel. But for some reason with our girlfriends, even when I know my girlfriends are gossip queens, they're probably going to tell like at least three people. I still tell them.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Yes.
I don't know what that is. But I just feel safe in the company of women sharing these things because like as not, women are going to have the same questions that I do, but I don't trust that men necessarily will or that my husband will necessarily understand. And the reason a lot of times I'm asking my friends or telling my friends is because I'm asking them for how do I make this segue in my bedroom? Like, how do I ask him this, you know? Which is funny because I'm like no filter Uzma. I should have the easiest time doing it. But no, it was a huge hang up for me too for a very long time at the very beginning of my marriage, in the middle of my marriage, and just very recently until I got sex coaching and got out, snapped myself out of it. So,
yes. And the funny thing is, what people don't know about Uzma, and I'm going to share something about her as outspoken and as like super positive, like she's very like in your face about certain things. She takes a very passive role with. Then her, like, it's so funny to watch. Like, she's very passive in her relationship with her spouse as like, you know, and it's not passive. It's more of a deference. Like I feel like you take a deference to him. And I love that, you know, but it is funny as somebody that has known her since we were kids and how outspoken she is about so many different things to see that dynamic between the two of them, where he's definitely more of like, you know, the person that she kind of, what's the word? Like
lean on him.
You lean on him for a lot. You allow yourself to be extremely
vulnerable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the hardcore Uzma is definitely lost when she is in the company of her husband, which is a very sweet, sweet thing to see. I personally love it. But that's the funny thing is I think a lot of the times, you know, because we don't necessarily have these conversations, definitely not in mixed company. Mm-hmm. So then when you do get married, you know, this is like taking everything else off the table, like that you've had any kind of issue or any kind of, you know, I'm just going to be honest about the like sexual dysfunction, taking that out. We just, even as a community, don't necessarily talk about these topics. So I feel like we're definitely going into these relationship things with a little bit more, stress on some levels. So even talking about things, like, at least for me, I can only say like, I get shy. I'm not as like open. I'm just not as comfortable talking about these things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I think for you, especially, this is just a really good card game. The next color is in sickness and in health. And
okay, so read an example. So what does that mean
in sickness and health? What I have at the top, this is a really important one from Muslim American couples, guys. What are your thoughts on cannabis? Mm. I think this is super important. And look, card with the question. There's no answer on the back because there's no what the correct answer is, whatever works mutually between you and your partner. Now, there are questions in here. Let's see. What does generational health, is generational wealth mean to you? Questions like that.
It sounds like it's more of introducing potential topics that you wouldn't necessarily think about.
Yeah, topics that could potentially cause conflict.
Issues and conflicts later on. That's actually really interesting.
And this is my favorite. The yellow ones are for richer, for poorer. So what money-saving survival skill did you learn as a child? I did not know this about my husband before I married him. No, nothing.
Zero.
Right? Would filing for bankruptcy embarrass you? Some couples have to do that. A lot of couples have to do that, way more than we like to think is true. But I think these kinds of questions are really important to what I found in using these was there were vulnerabilities that my partner had that I had no clue about. That's kind of my annual project, is to figure out what that is and how can I make them feel less exposed, less at risk. Like, is there something that I can do to make them feel more comfortable? And then sharing, like, okay, yeah, this is my vulnerability when they asked me the question. Because I pay deference, but I'm also the talkative one in our relationship. Yes. And I'm the one who's like pushing these games. So I'm asking all the questions. And when he provides the answers, then I kind of share my answer.
My answer. Because you're like, I'm assuming he wants to know.
I just assume. And if you don't, like, you should. So then I share the, you know, whatever, if there's a vulnerability that I have, then, you know, I know that he's got it in the back of his head to think about. And I could actually see at certain points after that, him trying to make an active effort to address those vulnerabilities without calling it out into the open, but he was doing things a little bit differently. And that's the thing. Big change is not going to happen. It is hard to go from like frigid cold fish to like hot baked. Nobody does that. Like, I mean, it's
and
weird.
And by the way, she's describing me. I'm the frigid cold fish. In case you haven't figured it out, knowing me now.
Yeah. Now, the cool thing about this is when you do your couples nights, and Zeba and I participated in online trivia with other couples, this can be with two or more players. This can be with other couples. They're pretty generally clean questions. I don't remember anything being like inappropriate. Like, I don't think I would be embarrassed by any of these in front of another couple or a couple friends. But I think it's a good opportunity to get to know yourself. And then again, in community, I feel like we learn better, which is why Zeba and I like to do so many things in community. And then it sticks. It's like, oh, I heard that one time, that card, blah, 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 or so-and-so said at that one couple's night, this. So I think-
And it holds you accountable, right? Like, because I mentioned one of my three words for the year was, it's three S words, swimming, sewing, and sexing. And, you know, and- Osama's holding me accountable. Like, she's like, you're going to get it done. So when you say it out loud, when you're saying it in company, when you're saying it in community, when you're around the right positive people, they're definitely going to hold you accountable and make you a better version of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I wanted to talk next about equipment to use. We've had people who actually sell products that are, you know, for more fun in the bedroom, and it can be anywhere from as benign as to a type of lubricant that you like. My favorite was the one that Nida Hijabulicious came on and talked about. What was it called? It was aloe based. Ooh, now I forgot. Now I have to go back and listen to the episode and remember. But if you haven't listened to it, go listen to it. Hijab Luscious has a favorite lubricant. Our lubricant fave is Uber Lube because it's silicone based. It doesn't stain anything. It's tasteless, safe to eat, no problem. Although I don't really recommend eating silicone. I'm not really sure long term what that does. Don't do it. But you can. And it's a great moisturizer for your lips too. So if you didn't know that. So from lubricants all the way to equipment that you may need. And a lot of people call them toys and they get like, oh, I'm not going to use toys in the bedroom. Oh my God. Some of this is like actual adaptive equipment. Because think about it. If you have chronic pain, chronic autoimmune conditions or chronic conditions that cause chronic pain, which a lot of us have, and those are like silent, I don't want to say disabilities, but silent illnesses that maybe you and I
don't
want to
talk
see.
About, right? Because there is this like, you know, stigma.
I am a superwoman. Yeah. We don't have that problem. We are totally fine talking about our back aches and this aches and that aches. And, you know, I got a bum knee right now.
Shoulder up when I do the downward dog.
I'm pretty sure I tore my rotator cuff.
You're like literally wrong.
The kid jumped out around the corner and scared me. And I went like this. And I've
and then you're
my
like,
shoulder.
You feel it. Yeah.
Yeah. No. That's how I hurt my shoulder.
Oh, you're kidding. Yeah,
that's how unglamorous this injury was. My kids scared me. I jumped. Since then, my shoulder's been
hurting.
Like,
I can't quite turn my neck.
I already had like arthritis in the shoulder, and now this one probably needs surgery. It's so messed up. But in any case, sometimes adaptive equipment is going to be helpful. So things like it's marketed as a sex cushion, but really, guys, it's a glorified wedge from like, remember when we were pregnant, we'd stick a wedge under our stomach
under
so
our
we
stomach.
Could take pressure off of our IBC. The doctor was like, roll this way, roll that way. Pregnancy pillows, those have a variety of uses in the bedroom, even after pregnancy.
Which is how you get pregnant to begin with. Let's just.
No, that's like, no, you could, if you really wanted to, you could, because it's pretty thick. So those sex cushions are actually adaptive pillows. And then there's sex chairs, which are also adaptive chairs because not everybody can be on their back. Not everybody can be on top. It's just, you know, there's certain areas that need pressure alleviated. Typically it's your lower back, your neck, your shoulders, and then obviously your hips need some accommodation, and not everybody is built a standard way. So these sex chairs are actually also adaptive cushions, and you can get them as cheap as $100-something on Wayfair to the $600 version online. And combined with the brand, their brand of the wedge cushion, you can do like 17 different positions.
Oh my goodness.
And it's like, I'm not talking about like kinky positions. I'm talking about positions to make both partners comfortable to achieve what you want to achieve, which in this series we know is pleasure. And while we talked about like vaginismus, vaginal pain, vulvar pain, some of these pieces of adaptive equipment are going to help with that. And that's not something that I remember to talk about during those episodes. So I wanted to save it for this one. We'll have links in our show notes for a chair that I've done a lot of research on, but I haven't figured out how to put it in my house without raising questions. Because here's the sad thing. The handyman.
When you have kids. I was going to say, like.
Not when you have kids.
You put all this equipment when your kids are walking around.
It looks like a slide. It looks like a seesaw. Like, I'm going to sit on it. And it's like, no.
And not only that, but as your kids get older, like we have older kids, they know what it is for.
You can like shoot your phone at it and Google will find it picture-based.
Oh, I don't even know that. Yeah. I haven't even done that.
What I like about this one is it is, it looks like a piece of furniture. Like if you had a contemporary style, it looks like a piece of contemporary furniture. But a friend of mine who had it said that the handyman that came over knew and were taking pictures and sending it to who knows who. Wow. And, you know, it was embarrassing for her. So I haven't figured out where to hide it. I even hide my wedge cushion.
Okay.
Everything is wipeable. Everything. Well, that has a removable cover that's washable. The chair is completely wipeable, but I still haven't figured out, A, the aesthetic doesn't match with my house, and B, I don't know where I would put it, where I would feel comfortable. So I haven't invested in that yet, but I know I will soon because, again, somebody who throws her shoulder out just being
getting older.
In the corner, this is something seriously to consider because, like, what I tell my patients is, dude, you should be having sex until you go to the grave. Like, there is no reason why you need to stop. So whatever adaptive equipment you could put in there puts you in control of situations that we don't necessarily have control over in the bedroom. And that's not a bad thing. I think that's a very necessary accommodation. And not just that, I think it's necessary for the relationship. So
I agree with that. You know, and funny enough, like another trivia fact. So like if you're listening, trivia fact, Uzma, what did you write your paper on?
Oh, not my paper, my research project.
Your research.
Fellowship. Yeah. So yeah. I'm a geriatric, like one of my specialties is geriatrics, which is the care of older adults over the age of 65. Some people say 55. You're a baby at 55. 65 and older. My average patient is 83. And so we have in Arizona the largest database of centenarians, which means over 100-year-olds in America. So people come in and every like so many years, they're coming in and answering these survey questions. And there are some sex and intimacy questions. So mine was sex and intimacy. In the oldest old, and oldest old is like 80 and above, really. I think I focus on 85 and above. There's no really, some people say 80, some people say 85. I did 85 and above. And what I found out was 60 to 69 year olds had penetrative sex at least once a week, 70 to 79 year olds twice a week, and 80 to 89 year olds three times a week.
OMG.
Now, this research is old now because I graduated 10 years ago. So what is happening now?
What the heck?
Because now the baby boomers are in their 60s.
Yes, and they were kind of like, you know, freaky back in the day. So chance.
Girlfriend, that's our curse.
Okay, I don't even want to know. I don't even want to mentally picture that. Okay.
I think it's really important because you know how our parents get honorary?
Yes.
This is one way I think I truly believe
to alleviate that,
is to keep them from being ornery. And that is really it. When we see behaviors in a lot of sick older people, oldest old people with dementia and behaviors, a lot of it is because that need for sex does not go away. So sometimes people are shocked that, oh, they're taking off their clothes or they're trying to have sex with sometimes even family members because they don't know who they are anymore. They're freaking out and making value judgments of all kinds. And it's like, I don't think you should do that because that part of the primitive brain remains. And so because, and it sounds bad, we call it primitive brain because it's just the very, it's the thing that we share with animals, you know?
Yes.
But we have other advanced executive parts of our brain and those we're gonna lose. So why don't we just have the equipment ready for the things that we're gonna need at that time? I'm not saying we're all gonna get dementia, but chances are as we get a growing population of older people, we will see more of it. But at least we have the equipment ready. And I think that's really important. And I don't think we should have so much stigma about it. The links will be in our show notes. I'm super excited to entertain any questions that you have at salam@mommyonemuslim.com. Of course, it's not medical advice, but it's just suggestions to think differently about kink and control of the bedroom. Kink and control in the bedroom does not mean S&M. It does not mean porn. It does not mean doing anything haram. It means using the resources that we have and the information and knowledge that we have available to us made by Muslims and by non-Muslims to make sex and intimacy more palatable, more enjoyable, more pleasurable, because pleasure is not a sin. That is not a Muslim value at all. Pleasure in sex is actually one of our values, is required. The lack of pleasure in the bedroom is a grounds for women initiating divorce. And we know we're less likely to be pleased in the bedroom than they are. They really can't miss. But even for men, you know, it's like they're 60% of men over the age of 50 are going to have some kind of erectile dysfunction. You add coronary artery disease, you add diabetes to that, you add hypertension to that, then you're going to have even more issues and maybe even earlier. So these are things that need to be addressed early and should be talked to your doctor about, because it's not just women who have issues in the bedroom. It's definitely men. Men have body image issues. They have ED issues. And the medical system is great for them because there's so many people who want to solve their sex problems and they don't want to solve ours because we're just incubators, right? So I think it's really, really important to get comfortable having conversations, asking difficult questions like, hey, if you notice a difficulty that your partner has, to say, hey, I noticed this. Remember that ED is also a harbinger, or is the word harbinger? It's a warning sign.
What does ED mean for the people that don't know?
Erectile dysfunction means, usually means it's a 10-year, it precedes by 10 years coronary artery disease. So heart attacks and strokes. So if you see that, the way to get it to your partner, to initiate the conversation with your partner, I think is, you know, hey, this means probably in 10 years, you're going to have a heart attack or stroke. So there are some lifestyle changes that we need to make. Forget
about the answer
right now. I'm trying to save your life because I love you and I would like to have sex with you until I go into the grave. So can we address this right now? And there are great medical advances that are available to you to achieve kink and control in the bedroom for both parties. And I think that that's key, 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 critical, crucial.
I love that. And this is one of your favorite topics. So if you ever see Uzma in public, feel free to ask her. She has no problem sharing, and it all tends to go to that topic anyway. And that's usually when I get up and walk out of the room, and then people make fun of me.
Her ears are red.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I will leave you all to it and head out the door. No, I love it. I'm definitely trying to be more open and receptive, because I want my kids to be sex positive. And the only way that they can be sex positive if I embrace that and I recognize that it's definitely a shortcoming. So this is not me, you know, putting any kind of judgment other than on myself, as in let's get a move on and make it a priority. And, you know, I've shared in past episodes that every year on my anniversary, my husband and I kind of renew our NICA contract to each other. And what we do is we talk, you know, very candidly, like what are things that in order to make it to the next year, what are things that the two of us can work on individually and together as a couple in order to do that? You know, when you're hitting about, I'm going to be 25 years this year, you know, every year does count afterwards. And I appreciate the effort that he puts in, and I'm sure he appreciates the effort that I put in. And, you know, we continue to have these types of series to really dispel and break those barriers within our community. It seems like we're, you know, so matter of fact about it, but the truth of the matter is we're fighting, you know, centuries of, and actually not really back in the day it was just a recent thing that was kind of added and was more cultural based than religious based. So that's another thing people need to know about.
It was colonization. If you guys don't remember or want to go to our first Kink and Control series.
Yes.
It wasn't called that, but you know, it was like February.
Definitely have the link to that, because a lot of people don't know the history that Islam in general is a very sex positive religion. I mean, that's the truth of it. We don't have those same hangups. We don't have the shame around it. And it was culture and colonization that really indoctrinated into the religious
values came and polluted our Islam and our sex positivity.
Yes. So it was definitely not the case. So we're just trying to go back to classical Islamic practices.
Oh my God. Did you just call us fundamentalists?
Yes.
Oh my God. CIA. She didn't mean it.
Yes. Only where sex is concerned.
Yeah, all over sex is concerned. We're very fundamental.
All over sex is concerned. So, you know, for people that are going to be in the DMV, you're listening to this, drop on a Thursday, come and meet us at Crescendo Studios in Falls Church. The address is all over our socials. And Uzma, I think we're going to wrap this up with a rapid fire with ourselves. So do we want to, like, maybe we should ask some of these questions of ourselves. Pick two questions.
Well, you don't have it in front of you, so you can't do it.
No, but you can text me in the chat.
Oh, okay, okay.
And then I'll ask you a question, and then you ask me a question.
Let's see. I'm just pulling it randomly.
And then we can prove that I can work for communication within co-hosts as well.
This is a really good one. This is actually something I thought of with us too.
So let's do that.
Yeah. You purchased something your spouse felt was too expensive. Would you take it back?
100%.
Yeah. Right? Same.
Oh, without a question. And only because, like, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. Nothing is worth the stress and the, you know, friction that it's going to cost.
On the relationship than on the thing, right?
And we're not talking about asking permission, right?
We're
talking about large purchases. I would want him to talk to me about it before he does something. This is really just about failure of communication.
Yeah. And this is a really funny thing, because my husband purchases cars and brings them home surprise.
Yes.
And I actually don't have a problem with that, because I'm like, okay, I did once because it was not what I asked for, which sounds very like privileged and bratty.
You're like,
I know,
sounds like a brat right now. Everybody knows that. It's okay.
But I needed a bench in the middle to fit more children.
Yes, because we have multiple kids. Exactly.
Don't bring
me. They don't think about trunk space, and they don't think about like car seats and stuff like that when we were in the thick of car seats.
Yeah, they didn't do that. And I also, if I purchased something that was too expensive, I would send it back. I would just want to have a conversation about it. Like, why, you know, why is this not okay, but that was okay when you did it, you know? So I want that equity there.
Like when we were in Morocco and you dropped money on some rugs that had to be shipped.
And you made zero judgment about it.
I appreciate that.
She was like, why don't you pay to get it shipped? Because whatever it costs, it's worth
it. We're not carrying this in the airport.
Yeah, there was no way. We would have died.
We're not doing that. So go ship it.
Yeah. Now, imagine asking your married partner this. Did you ever have second thoughts about getting married? This was a hard one when my husband and I did it.
No, I mean, we had that conversation even before we were married, you know, in the sense, because obviously we did not have an arranged marriage for people that didn't know. And we were just very open about it because the hoops we had to jump through in order to be together had to, you know, we had to think about it. Like, is this worth the chaos that's surrounding this decision, this very important decision that we're making? And we both had to ask that questions of each other and of ourselves. And, you know, and we had a very frank conversation about it, but obviously fast forward 27 some years, you know, it ended up working out. So you all can kind of guess what the answer is, but you know, you do have multiple times and multiple moments throughout your married life where you do question, you do question
100%
if you made the right choice. Mm-hmm. And that, by the way, is very normal. It's very healthy. And I think talking about it in a polite way, in a respectful way, I think is only going to help your relationship or highlight the underlying causes that make you believe otherwise. And then you can either work on it or decide, you know, now is time to go our separate ways. And you and I both have known multiple couples that have decided maybe this is not the right fit for me.
Yeah. I think the key on these questions, don't take anything personally.
No.
And my husband actually said, no, I've never had second thoughts. And I'm like, no, don't spare my feelings. Like,
exactly.
It's okay.
Because I want to know.
I've had second thoughts many, many times. I probably had them this week. And he's just like, no, I've never, because for him, marriage is one and done. And
yes.
That's it. You know, because that was just the examples that he saw his whole life. So, don't take it personally if they say it, because there's always a reason. Because remember, there's always a reason when we feel it too. And we just have to be able to explain it in a very loving, understanding way.
Don't be like me that sometimes get angry and upset and throw it at him.
Don't ever say that.
Yeah, don't do that. I've done that in the past. Yeah. The old Zeba did that. The new Zeba says, how could I have done that to this poor man?
I know. I did it multiple times too. It's like, I'm leaving.
It's usually after having babies. I'm not going to lie.
It is. That's such a critical time.
Your hormone, they're sleeping soundly and you're just staring at them and imagining.
Killing them.
Killing
no, actually, I never
him.
Imagined murdering him. That's why I married him, because I couldn't imagine murdering him.
I
did just want to push him down the stairs. That's all.
Yeah. And you never imagine that. And you're like, oh, I would be such a pretty widow. And then you cry. Okay. No, I have not thought that far. No. So let's strike
so
all
funny.
That.
This was a good one that he and I did. And this was really important to me because I wanted to know this about him. Has there been a time when you felt unappreciated in your marriage? Because I know he's really good about saying, thank you for taking such good care of us. Thank you for this great dinner. Thank you for arranging this for the kids. Thank you for blah, blah, blah. I don't say thank you to him.
Oh, and maybe he
and
usually
gets showing- noticed.
Yes, but he's probably showing you, doing for to you what he would want done for him,
done to
right?
Him. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Right. Like your love language is, he's probably like a love language of appreciation. Like there are things, there's something about that. Uzma's is touch. And I know that about her, you know, whereas I'm like that. I'm the appreciate, like my love language is acts of service and appreciation. Mm-hmm. And my husband's is touch. And it's funny because I'm sitting here thinking, I'm showing you and everything that I do, when I bring you a hot cup of steaming coffee, I even steam the milk, guys.
And like she filters it and does all of that stuff.
I do a whole thing, hand it to him in bed.
That's love.
And
that is love.
Yeah, that for me is love.
I would feel so loved.
Yeah. And then he gets up and he starts his morning. But for him, he wants to be hugged and kissed and cuddled and like all of that. And I'm just like, oh my God, I don't want that. You know, so you really, it does also open up a conversation about like what it is that.
What acts of service? What's your love language?
What's your love language on some level?
Yeah. And I think that was really important. Okay. Last one. And this is a very logical question to ask and to prepare for now at this stage in our lives as sandwich genners. One of your parents becomes ill and needs 24-hour care. What do you do? This is, I see this in my patients literally every day.
And every, you live it every day.
I live it because my in-laws live with
you have
me.
An only you're married to an only child. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is some people, they're like, we don't get it. Why does that mean you have to live with your in-laws? It does not. I just chose to do it that way. Yes. That's how we live our life.
That was a conversation you guys had that was important to him. And again, it can make, there are been so many people where in-law, these types of in-law conversations actually end up really causing friction.
A lot of rifts. Yeah.
A lot of rifts in the relationship between the husband and wife, between the extended family and the spouse. So having those frank conversations, you know, like I think we were raised in the such that you would help take care of whoever,
no matter what
it is that needs to be taken care of. Or like, I have a brother. So like, obviously, you know, we've talked about it as a full communal family. Like if my brother has to take care, we would help him to alleviate some of that stress for my side. And then on my husband's side, because there's multiple siblings, we would all take turns to make sure that our parents don't end up being put in a home. And we've actually even had frank conversations about what our kids would do with us. And my daughter always threatens to throw us in a home if we don't.
Which is not a bad thing, because like there's all this stigma against assisted livings and group homes. And some of them,
I want to have a golden girl situation, girl. Like I don't want to be living with my kids.
Die on the beach together.
We've talked about that. Like and I think a lot of people are doing that, but it does cause for, and we've had this conversation and I've told my husband, I'm like, oh, I'm going to end up living in a house with like Usman. Like we talked, he's like, I like how I'm dead in this scenario.
Statistically, you will be, you know, like a lot older.
Like
by 10 years sooner.
You know, with my kids, like I feel like if there's four of us living in a house, we can just bring a nurse in and like our kids can come and visit. Like,
I have four patients like that. They're literal golden girls. Yeah.
And we
have no family. So each of them like took care of each other until each of them died. And then there was two left. And then they both got sick at the same time and died within months of each other. And that's when a third party finally had to step in and take care of them. But they had these conversations and they had these preparations.
And we have to have the conversation. Yeah.
My husband avoided this question for years. And I finally was like, listen, this is like my bread and butter. This is what I do. Mm-hmm. And now it's on this card. I was so happy. And so we actually got to have the conversation and talk about, okay, this is going to be the end game. This is going to be the non-negotiables. This is how we're going to save for all of it, you know? And this is, you know, what we need to say to your parents, to my parents. And I think it's really, really important. Very practical game. Again, this is Surviving Marriage in the 21st Century, Couples Game, 99 Questions for One Great Conversation. We're going to link it in our show notes. We're going to link the show notes to the accommodative equipment, adaptive equipment that is going to help.
Yeah, don't just start Googling sex chairs, everybody, because God knows what's going to come up.
Yeah, it might, if anybody checks your browser history, there were actually Victorian era, they're called queening chairs.
What?
Very disturbing. But, you know, hey, colonizers, what are you going to do? So don't look
now
up that.
Now I'm curious, but I'm going to try to fight the urge of like looking up a queening chair. Okay.
We can link up what you actually need to use, what's actually going to help both of you achieve assistance. And we're also going to include, we forgot to mention those of us who are single mothers, single women, whether you're married, widowed, divorced, unmarried, widowed, divorced, whatever it is, there are things that you might need to use and that I have learned from my friends who are young widows or young divorcees, younger divorcees, what they've had to use. And that's also a means of getting control so that you don't fall into sin. You can still do your job and do your things and not feel bad about taking care of yourself and your vulvar vaginal. That is a harder word to use than vaginal. Vaginal, vulvar, and sexual health. Okay. Because our sexual health is always addressed as reproductive health. Yes. We're not reproductive anymore. but we're super productive. We're done. We're super sexual still. So that never stops. All right. Thanks everybody for listening and hanging on this long. Your ears should not be burning by the end of the series because you are in control. Assalamu alaikum, everyone.
Thanks again for joining Zeba and Uzma on Momming While Muslim today.
Please email us your thoughts or questions and follow us on Facebook and Instagram because this podcast was designed to cater your needs.
Make sure you check out the show notes to find the links and resources for this episode. And remember to help a mama out and leave a review of the show as well as to like it on your podcast app of choice because that helps us grow.
Tune in next week for another episode of Momming While Muslim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone.